from MLU headquarters in Philadelphia. This is Cleats and Cufflinks.
Welcome to another episode of Cleats and Cufflinks. I'm Nick Darling, and I'm here, as always, with Dusty Rhodes. Dusty.
Hiya.
How are you?
Breathing. Better than not.
Oh, man. Yeah, it's been a crazy week. We're going to get into a little bit of a crazy sports week thing. We're going to do a little bit of talking about the season, as a couple of our teams have reached the halfway point.
Yes, that's enough. True. That's true.
But first, we're going to say thank you to our sponsor, Heavy Seas Brewing Company, down in the kind of Baltimore, Maryland area.
Indeed.
Kind enough to support the show, most importantly in liquid form.
GFOP, and good friend of the pod.
Good friend of the pod, to reference my favorite podcast, other than ours, of course.
Well, clearly.
But yeah, Loose Cannon today. Which is their Hop 3 IPA. So I'm guessing hoppiness.
Oh, yeah. I've had this one a handful of times. It's often on tap in the Maryland area. We'll do a little bottle read here.
Yeah, let's get the bottle read.
Our Loose Cannon Hop Cubed Ale is opulently hopped 3 times in the brewing process. Herbal and aromatic, an amazingly graceful American IPA. I've had it on cask a couple times, either with or without extra things in the cask. You know how they like to put hops or mango or something interesting in there. But yeah, I like this one.
Yeah, I mean, I've had it a few times myself. It is a good beverage, and I'm certainly not going to turn it down for familiarity. So again, thank you to Loose Cannon.
Oh, you're
and
a fast
remember,
pourer.
Enjoy your Loose Cannon responsibly, of course. And I guess I said Loose Cannon instead of Heavy Seas. I get a Heavy Seas and enjoy your Loose Cannon responsibly. And so today, a special toast to one of the most improbable events in sports history.
Ah.
Leicester City has won the English Premier League.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think a lot of people out there listening to this by now probably know how crazy this is. So we don't need to belabor it. But
the fact
for the
remains.
Few of you that haven't read any articles or haven't paid any attention to this, they were 5,001 odds to win the championship. Bookies just in Great Britain paid out $25 million.
Right.
Just in Great Britain.
And they were actually higher, more leveraged than that.
Oh, they were on the hook for probably twice that. But they'd been buying it back through the season. Because this is the interesting thing about it, is that the way that season is put together, this continued to be almost as improbable all the way until it finally happened. Leicester City, more improbable. I think we found a couple of fun facts. You had a couple earlier. More improbable,
Elvis being discovered alive.
Yeah, more improbable than Elvis being discovered alive. according to actual bookies.
Right.
You can place these bets. More improbable than Simon Cowell becoming the next Prime Minister of England.
More improbable than the Philadelphia 76ers, who are actively trying to lose, winning the NBA championship.
I did not know that one. More improbable than Hugh Hefner coming out as a virgin.
Or Obama announcing that the moon landing was faked.
Yeah. So that gives you a little bit of context. You know, last year, Leicester City... So the way the Premier League works, for those who don't know, is there are 20 teams in the league. At the end of each year, the bottom three teams in the league drop down to the minor leagues, essentially.
I was going
to
say, what do they call that division?
It's called the championship, which is kind of weird.
Yikes.
Yeah, it's called the championship, and then there's Division 1 and 2 and so on below it. And you can drop all the way down and out the bottom.
Division 1 isn't even 1.
Yeah, you can get, it's a complicated history. But you can get flushed right out the bottom of this thing. So the bottom three teams go down, and the top three teams from the division below move up. And this happens all the way down through the divisions.
The relegation.
It's the relegation system. So last year, Leicester City was going to be relegated. It was almost positive. They had only 19 points through 29 games, and no team with less than 20 points through 29 games has ever stayed in the league. They didn't. They performed their first miracle. Do you need 3 for sainthood? I think they're 1 away. They performed their first miracle, which was to stay in the Premiership last year by winning 7 of their last 9 games.
It's a good run.
A very good run, seen as draws are relatively common.
Right.
And then they went on this year, of course, to win the Premiership with a roster that defied understanding. I mean, the big teams, it's been said for years, only the big teams can win. Only the big money wins because they can afford all the best players and all that sort of stuff. And Leicester City's roster, I mean, I think Jamie Vardy, who scored a lot of their goals this year, I think he was playing in like the fourth division like 5 years ago.
They just found him somehow, or convinced somehow got more out of him.
No idea.
Well, I'm not the Premier League watcher. It's not my soccer league of choice. I wait for them to graduate from that league and play in the Champions League
to pay attention to. And I think that brings us to the little conversation we wanted to start with is formats, right?
Very much so.
You're a big proponent of tournament formats. You love tournament formats.
Yes.
So Champions League is one of your favorites, probably.
Champions League does, they do home and away matches, and they count away goals separate than home goals. So you have this sort of complex two-game format. So it's not quite a series. So you're not trying to win two games out of two or one game out of two. It's an aggregate, and you compare home and away goals. We were talking about this yesterday during the match. And it's just an interesting way to do it. And it's the same thing with series play. So like the NBA and Major League Baseball and hockey, they all do best of seven series. So that gives you an opportunity to sort of determine over a longer stretch who is the best team between two pairings, which is different than the Premier League, where there are no playoffs.
No playoffs.
It just stops at the end of the season.
In fact, the season is still going, but we know who the winner is because it's points. 3 points for a win, 1 point for a tie. That's it. You play every team twice, and whoever gets to the end and has the most points wins.
And without going into all of my thoughts on tournament formats, and I have a lot, Frisbee, by and large, has been played with tournament formats, varying formats. You usually start with pool play on the first day, and then you go into elimination play on the second day. Some regionals formats go directly into bracket play on the first day, and you have like backdoor brackets to get back in. So it's a double elimination rather than a single
elimination.
But
if you look at club or college seasons, you're actually looking at a collection of tournaments and seeding rules and
flights, and there's different formats,
takeoffs,
and those, even though they're more standard, sometimes you use different size fields, sometimes you play to different point values. So it's rather varied over the course of a Frisbee regular season in club play or college play.
And then we, of course, went to a almost like an American football style thing, play games on weekends.
Yep. Not that many of them.
It's a relatively short season. And then we go into a postseason, which involves playoffs and a championship. Obviously, given the fewer number of teams, we have fewer teams in the playoffs. But it's the same kind of idea. And I was reading about the Premier League setup, right? It's 20 teams. They each play each other twice. And then you relegate three teams, and one team wins the championship. The top four teams go to the big tournament in Europe. There's all these little sub-trophies you can win throughout.
Which is one of the most fascinating things for international soccer, is that your individual clubs compete in all these different formats, different contexts.
But the reason that Premier League format kind of works in England is, one of this writer was saying is geographical.
Yeah.
Because you can play everybody twice. You know, your longest trip is not all that long if you're just going from London up to Manchester or to Liverpool. And in the US, we have this massive country. So if you take a look at the NFL, for example, you have to kind of create these conferences and divisions in order to have more reasonable logistics. Now, it's changed over time.
Precisely.
Yeah.
And this is one of the big arguments.
Because teams have moved and shifted.
For example, the NBA, they're talking about doing away with divisions entirely and not having an East and West and not worrying about the travel quite as much. But still, when we talk about schedule losses and we talk about when MLU teams have two games on a weekend, they're generally expected to lose one of them.
Yeah.
And in the NBA, in the NBA, you talk about schedule losses where you're playing four games in five nights, or you're playing back to backs in cities that are a little far away, or you're playing, just any number of ways where you can sort of look at the schedule and say, we're not going to do as well in that game. So how are we going to adjust? It gives you lots of variance over the course of the season.
Absolutely. And it kind of brings you to the point, too, where you're thinking there, even, as a player, I don't know about you, though I do know about you.
Oh, you know about me.
When you get on the field, your goal is to go and win. Like,
yes.
That's what you're doing out there. That's the only reason for being there.
It's not even a question.
We're going to go win. For someone managing a team, coaching a team, there may be other kinds of variables at play, right? If you're playing if you're playing an out-of-division game and then the next game is in-division, well, that next game might be more important, so maybe you're not going to play your starters as much in the in-division game, and you're thinking about the season as a whole, as an arc. often as a player, you're thinking about the game in a very specific sense. At least I did.
And this is how you get things like in the NBA, where you sit players just for rest,
mm-hmm.
or just because they're old, as Tim Duncan has been declared a couple times by his coach when he had to sit out. Did not play, coach's decision, old. So it's these things where you adjust to the format that you're playing in, but in the MLU specifically, one of the things that I learned the very first season that I was here when I was working with DC is that the season's not over when you have four losses.
Yeah.
You can be behind late in the season and make a run of five games. If you win five straight, like your last five games, you're going to improve your standing a lot. With the exception of if you already have five losses, yes, you can still get into the playoffs, but you're going to need a little bit of help.
Right. But I think for a coach, the season isn't over if you have nine losses.
Right, because there's more to it.
Because there's next year,
yeah.
And you have things that you still need to accomplish and that you still need to get out of your team, and you have a note you need to leave on the door. So when you show back up for that next season, people are like, okay, I see, this is bad, but the trajectory
right.
is what we want to see, so we're going to pick up here. You know, and I think that that's a very, very different thing. But yeah, I mean, looking at the format that we use, right? And we're going to try to look at what some of these teams have done so far, mm-hmm. because we have it's kind of an odd schedule this year in that there's a very staggered number of games being played. And that was based on a couple of things to give background. We had a couple of requests from players. We knew we were going to run still a pretty tight 10-game season. You know, we weren't looking to expand the season quite yet. With the same teams, and that may change going into next year or year after. You never know. But we knew that's what we were planning on doing this year. And when we talked to the players and through the advisory committee, we talked to the coaches, one of the things we got back was that they wanted to see more doubleheader weekends because it gave them an opportunity to condense kind of their obligation to their team a little bit. And we wanted to keep the season a little bit tighter than last year. And that's both from the players' perspective and from business. When mm-hmm. we ran up into August for the championship game, that's like full swing summer vacation, like tougher to get crowds, tougher to build people up. So wanted that game to land in July. The result is, though, we have a kind of odd thing where we have a couple of teams that have played five games and are halfway through their season, technically, this early on. And then we have a couple of teams, I think San Francisco only played two?
Correct. That's what I was just checking here.
Two games.
To make sure that I had that number right. I kept thinking it was three. But so we were talking about on the bus ride as I traveled from Boston down to New York over the course of this weekend to, you know, call two games. And they were talking about sort of some of the frustrations that you have with the unbalanced schedule. And I was talking about how much fun it is from a commentating perspective and a writing about the league perspective to have teams sort of rush ahead in the standings and see, or other teams seem like they're falling behind because they only have one win or they have one win and one loss. So it gives you more room for speculation and room to try to extrapolate from what you've seen so far into what you expect to see later.
Yeah.
And these two game weekends, I've been fortunate enough to call a bunch of games where I see the same team Saturday and Sunday.
Yeah.
And that helps me get a really good sense of what they do from game to game. And it gives the players a chance to be together. So build, like team building, just existing on the bus together during those trips.
Staying in a hotel. Yeah. Yeah, that's those trips are interesting too, because it, you know, condensing the season and saving it like monetarily works out. But then logistically you're adding costs because you had hotel stays and things like that in there. So it's been an interesting experiment. But you're right. I think I like the imbalance as well because I like the idea that Portland is 5-0 right now, riding high, winning the thing. But San Francisco's 1-1.
Right. You don't even know.
And you don't know. They could end up 4-1 at the end of the next couple weeks and suddenly, they're in the mix.
Yeah.
And we had no idea they were that good yet, you know, and I think that the game in hand idea is kind of entertaining.
Yeah.
But we said, you know, at one point, hey, when we get like halfway through the season, let's do a cleats and cufflinks. It's more about the actual gameplay rather than basketball or soccer. And it's hard to find where that point is. So
seems like now might be
a couple
time.
Teams are there. So let's do it. So we're gonna go through, I guess, sort of team by team. And just talk about what we're seeing so far, what kind of players that we're looking at on these teams, and and get our thoughts generally on the trajectory of the season thus far.
So where would you like to start?
Where should we start? Well, let's start with Vancouver.
Ah.
This is the first one I have written down on my notepad.
So. You must have been going reverse alphabetical order for some reason.
Yeah, I always start reverse alphabetical.
Or most Canadian to least.
that's generally where I start. It gets really complicated after that. I have to decide what number of each team's players lived closest to which border.
I think we've got to go with Seattle as the most Canadian, non-Canadian team, except they may be anti-Canadian more so than the rest of us who don't deal with Canadians.
Oh, that's very interesting.
Or Canadiens, which is a different thing.
Canadiens is quite different. Yeah, the Seattle guys, I rode the bus up to Vancouver with them once. Ah. And they love playing Vancouver at any chance they get because they, you know, that's their thing. But we had to stop at the outlet malls. That's a big Seattle tradition. No, it's before you get to Canada. Like, literally, it's a place that they could just go. But the whole team has to stop. It was basically take that scene from that Julia Roberts movie where she's a call girl and she gets all dressed up and goes out shopping. It's the entire team acting out that.
See, that's really very different than the East Coast road trips that I've been on, because they just stop at rest stops on the Turnpike or on I-95.
Yeah.
And that's not very exciting. It's just kind of depressing. It's like every other road trip.
The Seattle guys know how to travel. And there's there's some video evidence of that as well. You can go out and find that.
So what have you seen from Vancouver thus far?
So it's interesting. I got to call a Vancouver game
this past weekend.
But I wasn't in Vancouver. That was kind of the crazy thing about calling that game. We called it from here.
Yeah. It seemed to work out pretty well after I went back and watched.
Yeah, I mean, there are challenges to it.
Because you can't quite tell how
the weather's affecting things. You also have trouble seeing cuts as they develop.
Right.
And making
the anticipatory comments.
Yeah, making the anticipatory comments. But by and large, it worked out very well, and I enjoyed the game. But so, watching Vancouver, they're 0-5 right now.
Yes.
It is, for those unfamiliar with sports, it's not a great start. Not a great start. They've scored 68 goals and had 120
which
scored against them.
Which puts them at minus 10 per game on average.
Yeah. Yeah. So
10.4 around there.
Yeah. So they've struggled.
Yeah.
They've struggled. But I think if you look at the situation, brand new coach, came in really late.
Yep.
Gatien?
I haven't met him.
I've met him, but he says it with a French inflection and I can't do it.
You just have to pretend that a lot of those letters aren't there.
That's the thing. Yeah, that's what he does. So I apologize. I'm bad at French pronunciations.
and I'm no better, so I won't even attempt.
Yeah, I think his phonetic on his thing is like Gatien. Or something like that. So maybe that's closer.
I have no idea.
I'm going to have to ask him.
I'm better with the Spanish.
I'm going to have to ask him again to repeat it for me. I apologize. But he came in late and inherited what is a very young team, relatively inexperienced team, and certainly inexperienced playing as a team on the MLU fields and in that rule set. And it was patently obvious in the first couple of games that they were just getting their feet under them and trying to figure it out. But we've seen, I think, a lot of improvements from this team. And I feel like if I'm the coach of that team, that's where I'm making most of my value judgments on what we're doing. Is I can imagine having a goal for the season that reflects the expectations. So it reminds me of going back to Leicester City. They hired Claudio Ranieri to coach the team, which everybody was really sad about, because nobody thought he was going to do anything good. when they interviewed him, they said, well, what are your hopes for the team this year? He said, they won their first game. And everyone's like, oh, that's amazing. So what are your hopes for the team this year? And he said, to reach 40 points. Because 40 points in the Premier League is basically like, that will keep you in the Premier League. Like,
right.
That's the basement below which is relegation. So he said that. So I'm picturing that, you know, if I'm coaching or managing Vancouver, I have that same kind of thing where I want to see improvement, I want to see a trajectory, I want to get to a point in the season where I can win games.
And we're starting to see that from them. Up until, in their first three games, they hadn't won any given quarter. There was no quarter in which they outscored their opponents. In the third week, they had a quarter where they tied their opponents in the first quarter. And then in the last two games this past week, in each one of those games, they won at least one quarter.
Yeah.
So that's a step in the right direction. And in their game against Seattle on Sunday, they got 7 breaks, which is their highest break total so far. So, and they also managed to score 18 points, also their highest point total so far. The problem is Seattle scored 28 points.
That's more.
But they're starting to put the pieces together.
Yeah, and you know, you always say if you can score 19 points, you have a chance to win.
Yes.
And so that's an interesting line for them to look at.
Provided you're not allowing almost 30 points in a game.
Defense does come into play.
The framework that I usually work with is there are about 40 points in an average MLU game.
Yeah, and I think that, like you said, I think they're improving. And you know, we have to move through these quickly to get them all in. But you know, the guy I've been noticing that I noticed most last weekend, which I hadn't been really paying attention to, but I look back and I realize he's been doing a lot for this team, is Taylor Nadem. He's a 6'4", like 25-year-old. He has, in the season so far, 7 goals, 10 assists, 3 blocks.
That's solid.
Very solid. And what I noticed about him about halfway through the game I was calling... the first time I really started to pay attention to the fact that we've been saying his name a lot, right? He's got over 1 touch per offensive possession, so he's getting the disc a considerable amount of time, right? But the thing I noticed was when he scored, I was suddenly like, wait a minute, that guy's been behind the disc for most of this game, and now he's downfield.
Versatility.
His ability to get downfield and make you pay there if you're over-covering him when he's back behind the disc. But if you give him when he's back behind the disc, we can see he's capable of generating assists, capable of moving the disc around. I think he's going to be a really strong player for them coming home.
Right on. I don't have all that much to add, but one of the things I noticed when I watch Vancouver play is they have some large men on their team.
Yeah.
And they're still figuring out how to use those. Both those individuals seem to be learning how to be big ultimate players, and the team is learning how to leverage that size. This is one of the things to jump to another team, if you don't mind.
Let's do it.
This is one of the things that we talk about when we talk about the DC Current.
Yeah.
When we talk about, the person who stands out to me on that team is Lloyd Blake, because he stepped into this huge new role where he's been involved in the offense over the course of the last couple of years. But this year, he's leading the league in throws by a significant margin.
Like throws per game or throws overall?
Period.
Okay.
He's just taking all of the throws. I mean, in the game on Saturday, or the game on Sunday, he had 52 throws. And he completed 49 of them or something along those lines.
That's a lot of throws.
Yeah. And we've been also tracking offenses versus defense stats.
Yep.
We've also been tracking second assists. So when Lloyd Blake is in on
the quote-unquote hockey assist,
right,
if you will.
I call them second assist because hockey doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah, because this isn't hockey.
No, but even if this were hockey, it still wouldn't make sense to me.
I also have that problem. Yeah.
The sort of this other thing that I tried to do when I was looking at stats this year is to combine goals plus assists plus second assists.
Yeah.
Because when you get goals and assists, you get a good idea of this thing, but then you add in the hockey assist and it takes you to this next level. So when he's in on offense in an average game, he's averaging 7.8 goals plus assists plus hockey assists. If we're just talking points, he's averaging 4.8 points, which aside from Khalif El-Salam, who has only played 1 game, 8 points in that game, by the way, aside from that outlier, he's leading the league in offensive points per game.
So
we're just talking, like, he's a 6'5 handler.
Yeah.
So when they put a handler defender on him, he goes downfield and says, go ahead, try to deal with me down here. When you put a downfield defender on him, he's very difficult to deal with, very left-handed, which tends to be an advantage. And
always.
While DC has been sort of floundering this year, they're at 1-4, their results have been getting better. They survived having a fourth quarter lead for the first time on Sunday.
They did that against New York.
Which was
there was
nice
a worrying
to see.
Moment in there.
Yeah, but then they got to that last point of like
three and a half
minutes where neither team scored, which sealed the deal.
Yeah.
So DC is also a team that is aiming on trending up as the season goes along. And thus far, I think they've been doing pretty well with that, absent the wins that they could have had before. But you don't get those back. You got to steam on ahead.
You have to steam on ahead. So it'll be interesting to see how they progress. You know, they really need to start winning games if they want to make the
postseason. Yeah, and they're averaging minus 1.8 goal differential per game. Not good.
Right.
Like once you're negative, that's not good, but they're bringing it
up.
But
they're so close.
They're right in the middle
there.
They're
so close. All right, you brought up El-Salam. So let's jump back over to the West Coast and let's talk about Seattle. You know, I think that given those numbers, you would really want him to be there for more games.
Right.
And I think he has, does he still have college commitments? Is that?
Well, there's a, I'm not his personal assistant, you know what I mean? I look at the rosters and I don't worry about, like, I look at the injury reports and all of that, and I don't really worry about why they're not there because it's not for me to figure out. Right. I just have to worry about the players who are there.
That's factual. I think though in some cases teams are probably worrying about who's not there.
Yeah, that's what we talk about, coaches versus players, responsibilities versus broadcasters and writers.
So
I'm not here to write about off-field stuff. It's not.
So Seattle's sitting at 2-2.
Two losses to the Stags.
Both their losses are to the Stags. They're one of these teams that's very close in point diff. They've 85 goals for them, 75 against. So
it's at 1.5.
Yeah, like plus 1.5 throughout the thing. That's
also with a 10-point win on Sunday.
Yeah, so that's the thing. Is I was going to bring that up. They had a 10-point win on Sunday, which really skewed that.
Jumping
so they've
the
been
gun.
Playing some very close games in general. And they lost a tough game to the Stags.
Come-from-ahead loss.
Yeah. Come-from-ahead loss, exactly. But who are you looking at on that team? Like,
the obvious person to see when you watch their offense is you talk about Danny Tridiak, because he just opens up so much space with a bunch of his throws.
Yeah.
But that's not really the tale of how that team succeeds. It's not what their offense does. It's what they're able to do after the turns on defense. So two of the players that I like to keep an eye on, well, three of the players, actually, is you look at Cam Bailey, you look at Eddie Feeley, and you look at Evan Klein. The three of them, if you're trying to figure it, like if you expect Seattle to win a game, usually one of them will have a good game. Like one of their defensive players will step up and play particularly or uniquely well based on a matchup or whatever. And those are the three guys that I kind of default to looking at to see what do I expect from their matchups.
Who are they going to come forward to? Yeah, I pulled Evan Klein out. Like he's a second year guy for us. And what I liked and what I found interesting about him is how his involvement level has trended. Right, so last year he was touching the disc 0.6 times per offensive possession.
Yeah.
This year he's up to almost one touch per offensive possession. So this is a guy that when they get the disc back is actually getting much more involved in their offense.
Yeah.
And as a result, he has 12 goals and 4 assists right now, which is a pretty good number for any player in the league. Tack 7 blocks on top of that, and you have somebody who's making a significant impact for the team. So I'm excited to watch him throughout the rest of the year, and I want to see their next matchup against the Stags and see like what kind of impact can he have in that big game scenario, you know?
Yeah, it's all basically the thing about the West is that, I mean, while we keep mentioning the Stags here, we might as well go in and talk about the Stags for a little
Let's
bit.
Let's talk about the Stags.
Everybody in the West basically has to judge themselves in the regular season against what the Stags are doing. Because the last two regular seasons, I believe they were 9-1 in both seasons.
I think that's right, yeah. I mean,
in the first season, they were
5-0
to
start here.
So
that's right.
It was just flipping it right around. And the way that they play, it's just their offense is so consistently difficult to match up with. And that's based on the two names that we always talk about when we talk about the Stags. We talk about Purston, and we talk about Bjorklund.
Yep.
Because they are just dominant downfield players. Yeah, Bjorklund likes to come underneath more than he likes to go deep. Purston likes to go deep a little bit more than he likes to come underneath. But just to find a player who can match up against those guys one-on-one, or to find a group of players that can rotate through, that's kind of the start for their team.
Yeah.
And then we talk about their defensive side and the guys who just put up points on people. When you were calling this game, it's all about once they get a little bit of a lead on you, they just seem to steamroll, and it just like builds and builds and builds. And I think that has to do with them playing players both ways, like playing the top of their roster both on offense and defense for specific points, like key points that you really want to get breaks on.
They play a very tight rotation for sure, yeah. And you see, I mean, we've seen Woodside come in on offensive points now.
Yeah.
He's a guy that I always watch. Cause
it's hard not to.
Yeah, and he just, you know, he's a scoring machine. He just finds space. It's not even cutting necessarily. It's just drifting into spaces where Bjorklund can pick him out or, you know,
and this,
any of their downfield.
It's so easy to talk about him because in this last game he was 2-for-3 on throws, but he had 5 goals. I mean, that's the sort of line that you just like, oh, I see what he does there. Makes goals happen.
He makes
breaks
happen. That's what he does. Yeah. And he's, you know, and he's been throwing assists more. I mean, I have him down at 16 goals and 5 assists. I think he had 2 assists all year last year. So it's a, you know, pretty significant increase. He had 25 total completions all of last year.
Fewer completions than goals last year.
This year he already has 18. So he's definitely getting more involved on the offensive side. Be interesting to see how that develops. Keeping us going, though, let's finish off the West Coast while we're over here, and then we'll travel back. You got San Francisco, as we said before, is the mystery right now. They've only played two games. They're 1-1. They have a +3 goal differential. So, you know, what do we know about this team so far?
Not that much. We really don't, because that first game that they had was such a slop fest. It was covered in rain and it was a little windy. Everything was happening in that game. And in the next one, I believe they lost to Portland in the next game.
Yeah.
And that's not really, I mean,
a lot of people right? have been doing that.
And the thing about them is they were developing over the course of last season. They got much better by the end of the year.
Yep.
So this year, we want to see if they keep building that upward trend. And they seem to be doing well this year, but we just don't know. They haven't been tested that much. But a couple of the players who have stood out, just like last year, Gabe has been standing out. Like,
yeah. Are you avoiding saying his last name?
I'm not sure how to say it. I just don't know.
Just take a stab at it.
I'm not going to do it. Because I can choose
a bunch.
I'm going
to say Sankea.
There's Sankea. There's Sunky. There's Sankei. Yeah. I've heard so many different people pronounce it so many ways that I've forgotten how to pronounce it myself. But also, James Sheridan is making a huge difference on that team, specifically on the defensive side.
Yeah, absolutely. He's been phenomenal. I mean, it's so early, you can't tell, but he has 4 blocks. He's only played one game.
And two goals, 3 assists, all on the defensive side.
Yeah, 5 points. 4 blocks, 1 game. So yeah, I mean, I agree. He should be a big player for them. He's almost doubled his touches per possession too. Like he's gonna show up again and again. And he has just fantastic facial hair. So you know, I'm a big fan.
Well, you know, I keep mine pretty normal, but the notion of fantastic facial hair,
it's enjoyable.
Wish I could pull it off.
All right, let's bounce back to the East. We're running low on time. We got Boston at 3-1 right now. 77 goals for, 64 against. Looking like Boston, you know, they registered that one loss against Philly, very close game in Philadelphia on the back end of a 2-game road trip. Who are you looking at there? You know, you've said before, like, this is a team that you always expect to go to the championship.
And it's a team that just has lots of players who are versatile. They can fill in different roles. They could play more offense and defense, but they're just relied on to do the other, depending on which line they're on. It's interesting that one of the big players to watch has always been Christian Foster for that team, since he's taken on larger and larger roles as the season has gone on. But calling their game on Saturday versus DC, watching how their team changed once they added Jared Inselman into their offense, they started using him sort of as a center handler, which means they can shift some of their other players to different places. You'd see Jake Taylor going downfield a little bit more. You see some other players just rotating around. So that versatility, again, is key for them. I'm not sure how he's going to continue going with them, but he's got skills and he's got the ability to stick with it. Stick with trying to figure out how to play with a new set of teammates. But to see how the team reacts to that as well will be very telling.
I mean, they're going to be great to watch. You know, them and Philadelphia headed into the end are going to be really fun.
Looking forward to that next game against Philadelphia.
It's going to be really big. A couple weeks from now. So Philly, talk about, they're 4-0 right now. They have been very, very solid through the beginning of this.
All over the highlights of all kinds.
Yeah, they're +30 points, right? They're +30 goals right now. So they're on their way. And I've been watching, and a guy that I'm really impressed with is a real veteran for them. He's been with the team for 4 years, and that's Matt Glazer.
Yeah, he's been doing very well.
He does what he does so quietly in a lot of ways. Like, you just get to an end of a game, and you're like, wait, how many goals did he have? So he has 14 goals and 5 assists on the season already. Even has registered a block in there. You know, he's getting the disc about once every possession. He's just been a massive player for them at a time when you expected to maybe see some of these young guys come up and be the go-tos.
And the thing that I'll tap onto the top of that is that the thing that has impressed me most about Philadelphia is what they do on defense this year. They look so much more aggressive and determined, and they seem to have specific ways that they're looking for blocks against different teams, against different types of offense. It's like there's a number of different players who just close to the disc so aggressively. Love seeing that.
That's my favorite thing. So Philly, we're going to see tested. They're headed to New York this weekend. So Let's talk about New York a little bit. What are we looking at in New York? They're 1-4 right now. You know, they've obviously had some two games where they've had a really tough time. But they got a big win down in D.C. with that huge fourth quarter comeback.
They have, and that gave them a little bit of early confidence. And I think that they're sorting out their lines a little bit better, sort of who plays with who best and who fills which roles the best way. They seem to have found a nice young player in Sean Mott who can both go up over defenders to get discs, as we saw multiple times. Can throw some assists like we saw this past weekend. Mm-hmm. Had one game with a bunch of incompletions, but aside from that, completes a bunch of passes as well. It's very important.
I love watching Sean Ma play. A short guy who plays big. You know, he's only 5'8", but 10 goals, 9 assists. Like He's been a really bright note in New York's
And we think of him as a receiver, but he's actually ranked higher in assists than he is in goals so far this season. Yeah. I mean, there's a whole bunch of players individually who are doing well on that team. Scott Zhu, Marquez Brownlee, like, they're all playing well, but it's not cohering yet.
It's not gelling yet, but they're one of those teams, again, like Vancouver, who's looking to take a bunch of young players, sort of a basic, let's call it a lack of chemistry from the beginning, and kind of mold that into something that they can use year on year going forward. And, you know, that's what I like about what's happening right now is coaches are actually thinking about next year and the year after in a way that they didn't through the first couple of years of this league.
Indeed.
Because, let's be honest, there's a lot of uncertainty when you start a league like this. Will we have a next year? Should
Startup
we just try to win this
league.
Now?
Yeah. What are you talking about?
Shocking, I know. But now teams are starting to look to the future. And we're going to look to the future as we watch the rest of this play out. Like I said, a couple teams halfway through, a bunch of teams not there yet. And I think, you know, we'll catch up more on these players that we've talked about over the course of Cleats and Cufflinks to the end of the season.
Did you just call me a moron?
Did I do that?
We'll catch up, moron.
We'll catch up, moron.
Sorry, that's the way I heard that.
Oh, man, I got to work on my pronunciation.
I'm going to give you a final note here
final
on the
note.
Shirt that we're
Let's
wearing.
Hear it.
This is a UPA Club Championships 2004, and the reason I'm wearing this is because of the crazy tournament formats that we like to talk about. One of the reasons that tournament formats are so much fun is because of the crazy things that can happen. So we were in, this is the old Power Pool format. If you're really interested, just go look it up. This is on the USAU archives. And when you win in the top, you go up with your record against the other team that goes into the next pool. So we ended up finishing in a three-way tie with Sockeye and Chain Lightning, having beat Sockeye, lost to Chain. Chain was eliminated on a -4 point differential, and we tied with Sockeye, so we both go up, and we go up with a win. Sockeye goes up with a loss. But in our final game in that pool, we were playing against Electric Pig.
Yep.
And we won 14-13 on double game point. Had we lost that game, we would have been 1-2, tied with Electric Pig at the bottom, and we would have gone down to the bottom bracket with a loss. So the uniqueness of that tournament format means that the difference between 1 point for this team, for Pike in 2004, was the difference between essentially having the first seed in the tournament, number one, which was Sockeye, and having the last seed in the tournament, number 16, which was Electric Pig. Formats make all the difference. And we talk about having a league, and we talk about having how the season plays out over 10 games. It's exciting because it's only 10 games.
Yeah.
Anything could happen still. All of these teams are alive. All of these teams can still finish 500.
So many possibilities. All right, well, we're out of time. We've run all the way to the end of it. Thanks for joining us on Cleats and Cufflinks. You can get me at Nick Darling on Twitter, N-I-C Darling.
At D-U-S-T-W-E-E-T-R, Dust Tweeter, Dust Tweet R.
Or both of us at Cleats Cufflinks. We'll be back again next week with more on... the MLU mostly?
Yeah. I'm enjoying the MLU talk.
Amen.